Well, welcome back, listeners, to Faith in Action here on Siouxline Catholic Radio. And it is Child Abuse Prevention Awareness Month. And today we are joined by Mary Hendricks from Mercy One Siouxland and Amy Scarman from Mercy One Siouxland's Child Advocacy Center. And ladies, before we start something else, Mary, you had the phone numbers that if I needed to pick up the phone or had a cause to concern, what are the numbers for Nebraska, South Dakota, and Iowa for Department of Human Services if I need to make that call?
Okay, so the 800 number for Nebraska is 800-652-1999. The number for Iowa is 800-362-2178. And then for South Dakota, you call 877-244-6864.
So, Amy, I pick up the phone. I've made a call to Department of Human Services. My child's going to come and see you all. My red flags and fears are flying everywhere, left and right. And I'm sitting across from the most amazing young woman, and I am so relieved to know that you and your staff are here. Tell our listeners about yourselves, about your staff. Why did you all come to do this work, and what brings you joy in your work?
That's a great question, Lisa. I think that I would say my staff is pretty special for doing what they do, and I think it takes a special kind of person to continue doing this work. So I think the most wonderful thing about the staff that works at the Child Advocacy Center is they care about this work. They care about the kids and the families that we see. It's not always the easiest thing to do to come in and talk about kind of the worst moment of people's lives every day, all day, but they have found it to be very rewarding and a really special time to be a part of this experience with the families. We know that they come in with tons of anxiety and concerns. I mean, no one ever wants to be in this place where they're experiencing this. No one ever expects to be in that place. So we try to do everything we can before they even get to us to reduce that anxiety and help them understand the whole process. We really take our time in calling them ahead of time to help them understand what they're going to be doing at the appointment. When they're at the appointment, we're walking them through everything the entire time, explaining the process, offering all of the support that we can throughout. You know, we recently had a family who shared their experience of the Child Advocacy Center, and they talked about how difficult it was to walk into that situation, having never experienced it before, and not knowing what to expect, but really appreciating the fact that this was available to people in that moment when they needed it. At no cost to them, at no cost, and with all of the support that we could offer them, I think families really appreciate that.
Explain, Amy, the environment. I know you have some incredible pictures at the Child Advocacy Center. Explain the environment that you all have created when families walk in the door.
Yeah, we have really put a lot of thought into that because we know how important that is. Our space in general is very child-friendly, so there are lots of bright colors and, you know, fun things around the office space to make them feel welcome. We try not to make it feel like kind of that stereotypical doctor's office. We don't want kids to be frightened of the experience. And there's lots of colorful art and pictures on the wall. We also put a lot of thought into having private space for people, so that when they do come to us, we realize how important that privacy and confidentiality is to those families. And every family who visits has their own waiting room. They get to spend time together in that space, and we have just created a certain flow for the entire space to make it work for everybody.
And what type of background do you and your staff have in order to be able to provide this excellent level of care?
Well, there's a variety, but most of us we have backgrounds of mental health therapy or social work, those kinds of things. We also have a nurse on staff who does the majority of our exams. We have a medical director who oversees the medical portion of our services. But really, you've got a lot of helpers that work at our center.
And Amy, if I'm correct, you are one of a kind. I would have to drive over 100 miles to be able to find this caliber of care for families. And so it really is a tremendous jewel we have here in Siouxland.
That's right, yes. Yep, we're one of a kind on this side of the state, actually. We're the only one on this side of Iowa.
And Amy, if I live outside of Sioux City and I doctor at another healthcare facility, does it matter? Or when I come to all of you, do you continue to collaborate with my healthcare providers, my local educators, to help my kids be successful?
We do see children from 30-plus counties in the tri-state area, so kids do travel quite a ways to come see us. We don't do a lot of coordination with other medical providers or educational providers. Because we're sort of that one-stop shop in the investigation, that's really our only role. And then what happens after that is the investigators themselves take that information and continue to work on the whole plan for the child, which includes medical, educational, all those things.
Amy, I was seeing on the Mercy One website that it said children that are abused are six times more likely to abuse a spouse or a child than those who aren't raised in a violent environment. Why is that?
You know, that's a tough one for me because I by no means want to give the message that children who are abused will turn around and abuse, because I don't think that is the majority of the kids that will come out of that experience. However, if you're exposed to violence a lot, that's going to be what you learn, and that's how you learn to interact with people. So unfortunately, lots of times that continues on to the next generation, which is why prevention is so important, you know, to talk about that now and stop that cycle of abuse is so important so that it doesn't continue to be a part of their life.
Is there a particular demographic that you see that has a higher rate of abuse than another demographic, or does it not reflect people's financial ability, where they live, etc.?
I think that's a great question, and I think it's probably one of the biggest myths that we see with child abuse. Is I think people really have this conception that child abuse only occurs in certain socioeconomic groups or certain cultures or certain areas of the country or something like that. But the reality is we see abuse happening in all of those groups across the board. So I don't think that those factors are as important as people think they are. I think abuse can happen anytime, anywhere.
Has the pandemic played any impact in the number of referrals that you've received over the past couple of years?
It's interesting. For us, the pandemic did not slow down referrals. For some places, it did. But for us, it definitely did not. I think what we saw during the pandemic was different types of cases. I think you saw a lot of people under stress, significant amounts of stress, and how that affected people who had never been in an abusive experience before. It was really interesting. People who normally had pretty healthy coping skills under that large amount of stress really struggled, and I think we saw some significant physical abuse cases during the pandemic, and just different situations that we were not used to seeing.
Amy, if I'm encountering some stress right now, what do I need to do to bring down that stress so I don't make a poor choice and inflict that stress inappropriately on somebody else, whether verbally, physically, etc.? What are some simple things that you say to parents to do to help cope with their stress?
Sure. I think really the important thing is you're recognizing that you have that stress, but then figuring out what works for you to decrease that stress, whether it's getting time away. A lot of parents really struggle, especially during the pandemic. That was really hard when people were so isolated and sort of stuck together. They didn't have the option of going to find their own time and space, but that's important. Having a good network of people to support you is really important. Talking to people about how you're feeling. We're big proponents of mental health help, so if you need mental health help, seek it out for yourself.
And as you're caring for a child that's going through the Child Advocacy Center, are you supporting those parents in that stressful environment and their siblings too, or is your focus on little Johnny?
our focus really is on making sure that the whole system is being supported, because we know that kids can't take care of their own needs all on their own. So they really need a supportive caregiver, which is why we have our family advocate available to that caregiver who comes to the appointment with a child. We want to make sure that they have all the resources they need for themselves, as well as the child, to make sure this is a positive outcome.
And does the family advocate follow up with them after a family leaves the child advocacy center?
She does, yes. She does a follow-up shortly after they leave, a couple weeks after their visit, but then she'll also do another follow-up down the road, and we'll actually continue supporting them as long as they want her to.
Does your family advocate work with other partners, maybe teachers that are working, scout leaders, etc.? Does that family advocate person collaborate with other providers in that home too?
No, not necessarily other providers. Sometimes she makes connections to other advocates in the community who can be a support to those families also.
Okay. So, Amy, on average, how many families have you guesstimated you help on a yearly basis or since the Child Advocacy Center was started?
On a yearly basis, we average about 700 children per year for our services. We were trying to kind of pull together the numbers. Since we started in 1989, I know it's well over 20,000 children and their families who have been served.
And what age ranges of children have you worked with?
We actually work from birth to 18, and then we also see some developmentally delayed adults as well. So they're not all kids all the time, but the majority of the patients that we see are children.
And is there a particular age group that you see more than another?
No, not necessarily. You know, the very young children we don't see a ton of because they aren't verbal or able to do some of the services that we provide. I just read something the other day that the average age of abuse is somewhere around like 7 or 8. So a lot of those children we see that are pretty young, between the ages of 3 and 7 or 8, they tend to be a little more vulnerable and dependent on adults. So those are a higher percentage of abuse cases, but we see a lot of teenagers too. We really see the whole age group.
Well, Amy, thank you so much. We're going to take a moment to thank our underwriters and supporters, and we'll be right back.